Hey guys, it's Payne. I'm really excited to introduce a brand new show to Bet the Board that combines sports and alternative investing, the very first of its kind. Sports betting and collectibles converging is inevitable. Let me tell you why. Sports cards and memorabilia are another way to get money into the market and do it without limit restrictions or the substantial hold you're accustomed to with sports betting. Whether you collected cards as a kid and are looking to get back into the hobby, this podcast is for you. If you've been collecting cards for years, this podcast will make you think and operate more efficiently. Are you in real estate? The parallels to investing in sports cards and memorabilia are uncanny. You're on Wall Street? Well, listen close. The best sports cards have outperformed the S&P 500 by 6x since 2013. And during the 2008 market crash, sports cards held up better than the S&P 500. Bet the Board, in conjunction with PWCC, presents Cardboard Chat, an entertaining, sophisticated, and informative podcast that combines sports, analytics, betting, cards, and memorabilia. Without further ado, this is Cardboard Chat with Jesse Craig, a leading figure in the collectible space, and me, Payne. The last time we talked, the Ducks hadn't lost the Civil War. You had an offensive coordinator. You had a five-star quarterback that was just waiting in the wing. How are you today, bud?
That's how you're going to open the show? we're just going for the jugular out the gate?
Well, good, there's a positive. Lord. We'll get to the positive here shortly.
Okay, well, I mean, in my mind, the positive is that it sounds like Moore is staying put. He's going to continue to be a Duck. But yeah, we had an epic failure of a Civil War, and we lost our OC. Deion Sanders is coming into the Pac-12 now, which should be interesting but fun. It'll give us some more attention. USC collapsed. I mean, it's what a weird year for the Pac-12.
It's the Pac-12. It's a soft conference, as our loyal listeners know on the gambling side of things. It's not my favorite conference.
You're soft.
The positive here is I am. The positive here is, officially, I had crowned you a couple weeks ago in error. I'd been since corrected. However, you got off the schneid. You beat me in the last episode that we had.
Let's go.
2-1.
Let's go. Hey, miracles can happen.
You did a little more research. You started going low in that episode. I said you flustered me. You had me frazzled. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And you ended up pulling out the win.
Love it. Thank God.
So we are at lucky episode number 7, and as we always try to do at the beginning, we have a little bit of a teaching moment here with some listeners that are new to the space, or even some old veterans that are listening, and we thought this would be a good time to discuss when the best time is to buy and sell, and I'll let you lead here, Jesse.
Sure. So when talking about the best time to buy and sell, it really depends on what you're talking about. There's some different factors in play. If you're looking to buy in the off season of a sport, that's usually a great time. You know, when you feel like the attention is away from that sport for whatever reason, it's just timing, or, you know, maybe the draft hasn't happened yet. People aren't talking about it, or maybe it's after the draft and the buzz of it is kind of died down and people aren't really paying attention because other sports are in the limelight. Those are great times to buy. Selling is always, you know, in my opinion, to limit risk if it's modern stuff. Preseason, if it's more vintage stuff, you know, around milestones or during the season when there's more attention on that specific sport and people are maybe playing the comparison game between a current player and a former player. But then there's also other times, like it just so happens in our space because of seasonality that May and June seem to be a kind of across the board a great time to buy. We always get a market dip that time of year. You got basketball wrapping up with the playoff, like getting into the playoffs and into the NBA finals. Baseball has already had about, you know, a month or two where you kind of know who's who at that point. Football is obviously not going on. So, you know, May and June is a really big time for buying in our space, as well as a good time to buy is in December. People think it's a bad time to sell, so there's usually less on the market, less eyeballs maybe, but I think it's a great time to buy. And then additionally, another really good time to buy is the holidays. If you go look at auctions around the holidays, it's just a good time to scoop stuff up. Once again, less eyeballs, less competition. So that's kind of the rule of thumb, is if from a timing perspective, if you can, you know, point at a time of year where you think less people are going to be looking at, you know, X, Y, and Z card, obviously that's a great time to buy.
I like that. I think what's always interesting with markets, you want to be adaptable a little bit. I think it's something that we might get discouraged and frustrated by, but the one thing you always have to know, it's like impossible to perfectly time every purchase and every sale. But to your point, there's some tried and true time frames that can at least set you up, I think, for better market entry and market exits. And we've hinted at some of those through the first six episodes, and you kind of expounded on some of those. I think in general, you want to be buying out of season, right? Out of sight, out of mind is kind of what you're looking for, right? If you're watching basketball and Luke is going for a triple double and you're on your couch with the laptop and run to eBay to buy a card ending that night, I mean, how many other buyers do you think are doing the same thing? But, you know, to your point, if you're buying some basketball cards, you have that little May, June lull. I think maybe even late August, early September, when, you know, we're all kind of football crazed and NBA camps haven't started yet. That seems to make more sense, especially, you know, if you like how a specific team looks heading into the season. Buying baseball this time of year, right? Everyone's focused on football. Basketball's going on. Baseball isn't on people's mind. You mentioned people cutting back their spending, preparing for the holidays. Now, again, right, going back to the initial point, being adaptable, I think, is really key. And you know this, right? Like, markets are informational. And sometimes you find out if a big comp is coming, if you can slip in before that becomes publicized. Or, you know, at the end of the day, right, the most valuable commodity is information. We talk about that all the time. Did you find out Fernando Tatis had some dirty urine a month before that became public, right? Maybe that's time to dump some things onto the market. And, you know, I kind of go back to not being a very large modern collector, but Patty Mahomes was the guy I wanted. And I found out a couple weeks prior to the trade that Alex Smith was moving and started loading up on some homes. So being adaptable, yep, and getting information is always key. But I think your true point there, buying in the off season, buying certain times of the year, buying around the holidays makes a world of sense.
Yeah. And then, you know, from a selling perspective too, you know, the timing of it, whether, you know, someone just played really well, it's a modern guy, you want to get rid of it. You know, that comparison game's going on because someone's about to break a record of theirs. Sometimes that's a good time to actually sell some of these vintage guys. But don't ever be afraid to take money off the table. You know, like you mentioned, it's impossible to time the top. It's impossible to time the bottom. I love taking a profit when it's there and not looking back. And I think that's a really important thing for people in our space to understand. It's okay to sell something and take money off the table. And you know what? Sometimes it's okay to take a loss too and reinvest that thing into something that you think has more upside. If you look at a card that you own or a card that you bought and you might lose 20% on it, if you don't foresee that card going up in the next 12 months and you feel like there's other opportunities out there for you, well, sell that thing, take the loss, reinvest that money into something that you think has some upside to make up for some of that loss. So there's just so many moving pieces to it. But, you know, really, it all comes down to timing and, in my opinion, taking money off the table.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with repositioning your portfolio. You see it all the time. Maybe get rid of some smaller cards to reinvest that in a market that you think is possibly going to ascend. I just did that recently. I capitalized on maybe the last little boom there with baseball and Jeter's documentary and sold some very small cards, you know, hundreds of them, and kind of flipped that into some memorabilia where I think that's kind of a surging sector over the next 3 to 5 years.
You actually sold a Jeter card?
I did. I sold a couple hundred.
What the hell's going on?
I got a bunch back from grading.
Okay. Here we go.
Throw them onto the market. Boom.
Love it.
This was a good conversation, I think, because a lot of people had sent some notes, and figuring out how to time the market's always important. And again, you're never going to time it perfectly. In talking about time, this leads us to our next segment.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. It's time, folks. That's right. We're going to discuss undervalued and overvalued cards, or maybe even some memorabilia assets, potentially some players. Is it time to buy, sell, or hold on to these assets or players? We'll give you some opinions and back it up.
This is a very interesting segment of the show because we get to talk about some undervalued cards, some overvalued cards, and a lot of the time, you know, we differ in some opinions here, but just looking at the one that you've presented us, I'm in full agreement with you here. It's the 2003 Exquisite Basketball set, specifically Michael Jordan. Talk to us about that, Jesse.
Yeah, so we've talked about 03 Exquisite on the show before, but, you know, I just want to reiterate how important the first year that Upper Deck came out with this Exquisite product is. So 2003, it came out at $500 a box. I mean, we're talking, this is 20 years ago. And that was an absolute astronomical number for a sealed product at the time. Crazy high end. And it so happened to be the rookie year of LeBron James, of Dwayne Wade, of Carmelo Anthony, of Chris Bosh. I mean, an all-time rookie class with some all-time players in it. And it was the first really high-end product that came out that utilized on-card autographs and, like, you know, kind of revolutionary jumbo patch cards. So, you know, we've talked about the 97 PMGs, whether it be basketball or football, and how important they are and how expensive those cards are for the 90s. Well, this is the equivalent for the 2000s. I mean, this product in 03 is a monster product. And I don't know if the perceived scarcity is there anymore. Look, this is what happens in the space. You get prices that go astronomical, and then guys that are collectors, not investors, but actual collectors, prices get so high that even they have to go, man, is it worth selling this thing right now? Does it make sense? Because I can't ignore these monster numbers. When that happens, you see a flood of stuff into the market. And then stuff, you know, the perceived supply is much higher than what actual supply is. And then you see prices coming back down because the availability of those assets, just, it's just different than what it really is. So I want people to understand with these 03 Exquisite cards, how important they are, how rare they really are. And I just don't think they're getting the love that they deserve from the buyers in our space. I mean, if you're a basketball buyer and you're not trying to scoop up Michael Jordan 03 Exquisite cards, then I don't know what you're doing.
Completely agree. And to your point, right, a lot of the times we look at serial numbering, we look at pop reports, but you start to dump plenty of these onto the market at once and, you know, panic sets in, or to your point, even at the peak, you start seeing 400,000, 800,000, $1 million sales, even if you are a collector, to your point. It's like, ooh, I mean, this is life-changing money. And that's kind of what we've seen. It's been this twofold effect of cards hitting the market at an all-time rate, people starting to panic because of other things in the market. But that doesn't change what this set is. It's first-year Exquisite Basketball. It has to be viewed like a first edition painting or a book, you name it. Mm-hmm. All game used uniforms. Visually, right? Some of the most aesthetically pleasing cards ever. You mentioned LeBron's rookie year along with a cast of other great players. Potentially the greatest rookie class of all time, arguably, right?
Yep.
And this set is just littered with nothing but NBA elites. This is just one of those products that is going to stand the test of time. It's how we talk about the T206 tobacco cards, the 1952 tops, the PMGs that you referenced, first year tops chrome refractors. This is that set, 2003 Exquisite Basketball. It's going to live on forever within the collectible space. For me, and this is one I think you had a little bit of trouble digging into, I had to send you some notes here. This makes me a little nervous that it's now on my undervalued list if you don't know about this set. But it's the 1996 Leaf Signature Series baseball set. And there's some uniqueness to it because back in 96, this was really one of the more highly anticipated products for baseball. It was the first product that was going to include an on-card autograph in every single pack. There were two releases within this series, 1996. So the first 100 cards were issued in August of 96. The final 50 cards came out in January 1997 as part of this extended series. And then you had like this integration of these Signature Series packs that were making their way into these blaster style boxes that were sold at retail outlets. So kind of that'll take you back to 1996, because we're thinking about this wave of retail and blasters being in Walmarts and places like that and people rushing for them over the last handful of years. This was something back in 1996, which makes this pretty unique. But you think about the idea of an autograph in every pack, that it might be overprinted, and that Leafs making the same mistakes most of these early 90s products had in them. But relatively speaking, that just wasn't the case, especially with some of these short print autos. And it's a set that I'm familiar with just because Derek Jeter's in it, obviously. It's his, you know, the year he won the Rookie of the Year in 96. So there's a bronze autograph out of 700. There's silver autographs out of 200, gold out of 100. Then there's this Century Marks autograph to 100 copies in the extended series set. So a lot of great names in this set that it's just, to me, pretty iconic. And, you know, the checklist was large, and so that created some rarity to it, right? Like you'd open this pack and you're like, oh my God, I can't wait for the auto, and it's like Raul Casanova in there. So it led to some disappointment there. But the set was just innovative, right? And it was just kind of that perfect amount of rarity to make key cards scarce but also liquid. And there's an interesting story to this before I kick it back to you, Jesse. In the summer of 2019, a guy, you know, his name's Brent Huggins. He had this gathering in New York City. I attended. There's a lot of large collectors and investors there. This 1996 Leaf Signature Series baseball set was important enough for him to include it in his slideshow.
Hmm. Love it. No, that is important. Now, mid-90s baseball is not my forte. Obviously, I'm familiar with the card, with you know, more the bronze, because, you know, that's out of 700 and that's more readily available. But what's interesting when diving into this set a little bit is, you know, even though there are 700 bronzes, PSA is only graded 68. I mean, that's incredibly, that's less than 10% of the entire population has actually gone through PSA. You know, golds, there's only 21 graded, silvers are 25. So the number of these cards, I mean, how many are left in the packs? I mean, do we need to go buy some of these and start ripping? Is that what we need to do?
Excuse for you to rip.
That's literally what I'm looking for. Just give me a reason. give me something to chase.
The box prices aren't that crazy either. And I'm sure I'll get a text message in the next like 48 hours.
Bought a couple boxes. Well, look, I mean, the cards are really pretty. You know, I like the way they're framed with white. And, you know, the autograph is kind of across the player. You know, you have the three different variations that you talked about. So there's rarity. It's a really pretty set. And it's a very popular Derek Jeter card specifically. But, you know, you mentioned the supply in that product. There's a lot of other names, a lot of other important people, a lot of other Hall of Famers in that set. So it's a really cool, unique set to kind of dive into. If somebody ever wanted to collect the entire thing, I would definitely try to shoot for the bronzes, because you might strike out otherwise. But it's a very, very unique, cool set.
Yeah, one of my absolute favorite that I thought deserved to be on the undervalued list. Bring a little bit more attention to it, because it is a great set. And again, we just talked about it at the top. This is a decent time to be buying some baseball. Now, let's transition in to the segment that everyone seems to love. It's magic number time.
Pick a number, any number, whatever it may be. We got a number inside, but we want a magic number. All right, this is where we're going to pick a few big cards that enter in an auction over the next couple of days, and we're going to try and guess how much they sell for in advance. Throw out a number. We got one too.
Okay, I was watching some soccer earlier today, and it doesn't shock me that the first card on your list that you're giving us is a soccer card. What's going on
baby.
There? I mean, you're just jamming them in here.
Well, I mean, it is that time of every 4 years. look, Mbappe is absolutely playing out of his mind. He's having the best World Cup of any individual player. You know, France is going up against England in the round of eight. And, you know, if he performs well there, it'll be interesting to see what this card does. But, you know, when I picked this card out, I didn't realize there was one actually closing that closed last night. So that was something I didn't foresee. So we have a very recent comp, and it sold for $8,800 recently. But this is the 2018 Prism World Cup Blue Kylian Mbappe rookie out of 199 in a PSA 10. You know, pretty looking card. It is a World Cup card. It is a rookie. And like I said, one sold last night for $8,800. So, you know, really what this boils down to is how they play against England and how Mbappe plays against England. They get the job done. They win that game. Mbappe scores a goal. And this card will likely sell for more than it sold for on Sunday. That being said, I have this card at $9,450.
Woo. Okay. So you did a good job doing my job in introducing the card. I just wanted to talk about why you
dropped another soccer card.
I like it.
Trying to take some work off your table.
You got something to do. You got places to be. Let's do this. I agree with you, right? Like, Mbappe is the best player in the world right now. You mentioned the 3-1 win over Poland on Sunday. They're now in the round of eight. The auction ends in 6 days. France plays England in five. So there's variance with this projection. So if France does win on Saturday, we could see Sunday sales.
Do you know who's favorited in that game?
Yes, I do. Right now, France, as we record, is a minus 145 favorite to advance over England. So roughly a 60% chance, the odds are saying, that France moves on. And you did mention some of the cards that sold frequently. There was two of them that sold. One had the Mike Baker gold, and that created about a 2x premium. I know you guys are in business with those gentlemen as well. And the other one sold for $8,800 after the buyer's premium. This is what's scary, right? Just kind of playing the numbers game here. It's more likely that France advances than not. Two sold recently, so maybe that takes two guys out of the buyer's pool.
True.
I was going to come in lower than you on this one. I'm actually going to be at $8,700. And okay. I just think that when we look at two guys potentially being out of the market, you're going to end up winning if he goes on to beat England and score a goal or two. And I'm going to win if they end up losing or he doesn't play overly well and they like slip by in PKs or something. So that's right. What this is going to come down to. You're going to be rooting for France. Not that I have anything against France, but I certainly want to win this after you won last week or when episode six, you got the monkey off your back. You beat me 2-1. You're off the schneid here. So I have to not let you catch ground.
Love it. No, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's going to come down to performance and if they win, but we'll see. You're taking the under route like usual.
Well, I like that you went a little bit high here in this market. I appreciate you. Letting me do that. The next card is my favorite of this grouping. It's a 1998 EX Century. Duncan Go Nuts, Michael Jordan in a BGS 10 pristine grade. This is a wildly popular issue. It's acetate, which has the ability to yellow and causes some grades to really, you know, fluctuate. Prices fluctuate based upon that acetate color. When you look at this card, it's got the color scheme of Dunkin' Donuts donut box, right? Hence the name and the play on words there, Dunkin' Go Nuts. If you haven't seen the card, just go to PWCC's website, search it. Beautiful, right? Jordan's in that vintage dunk tongue out pose. Now, it wasn't the most rare insert. Estimated odds were one and out of every 36 packs. There were only 20 players in the set. So theoretically, it would take about 720 packs on average to pull a Jordan. Now, a BGS 10 copy sold for $7,300 back in August. Jordan's market is down roughly about 15% over that time frame. And you're thinking, hey, I'll go lower on this. But for whatever reason, that BGS 10 had lots of yellowing. The one PWCC is selling that ends Saturday night is truly a pristine copy. And I have to give you guys some credit here, as if you need another pat on the back. The new imaging that you guys have had over the last 6 months have changed dramatically. And whoever took a picture of this card, the acetate shows absolutely zero yellowing. It's already over 5,000 with 6 days left, even with the market down.
Trading cards and memorabilia have seen incredible growth as an alternative investment. The company leading the growth? PWCC Marketplace. PWCC Marketplace runs the largest weekly auction of authenticated sports cards, Pokemon cards, comic books, video games, and memorabilia in the world. PWCC Marketplace also has more than 65,000 items listed in their fixed price marketplace that you can make an offer on right now. Head over to PWCCMarketplace.com and see why they're the best option for buying and selling trading cards, memorabilia, and all of your collectibles.
I'm going with something in the ballpark of the last sale. Put me down for 7,523 on this one, Jesse.
I like how you threw the 23 on there. I
had
see
to.
You did. Yep, I see that. Well, I appreciate it. No, look, imaging is something that we focus a lot on. And so, you know, I appreciate you recognizing that. Something we always continue to improve. You made great points. You know, for BGS10, this is, you know, pop 29, which is actually fairly high. So the biggest condition issue with this card is the coloring, right? The yellowing that you get. And PSA 10s have dipped a little bit depending on that. It's kind of like the 96 Topps Chrome Kobe, right? The greening on that. It's the same, similar situation. I've got this card because of the quality of it, pretty close to where you're at. I had this at 6,800. So we're going over under basically at what the old price was, but I've got this card at 6,800.
I feel good about where I'm at here. I did not think I would feel good on this one. I'm feeling really good just because of how clean that copy is.
It is. It's very clean.
It was nuts. And whoever took an image of this deserves a race, because even some of the images of this card 6 months ago weren't as clean. This one is honestly, and I've one of my favorite cards. I've not seen one cleaner. So just absolutely ridiculous. I'm hoping someone that's savvy enough realizes that the acetate is pristine on that card and bids up. The next one, oof, you're taking me out into deep waters again. It's a 2019 Panini Noir Sneaker Spotlight Zion Williamson Rookie Auto. It's to 99 copies. It's a BGS8. I'm going to let you discuss the card and put your guess in first, Jesse, and then I'm going to take the kid gloves off on this card.
Well, look, I picked this card for a reason, like usual. And the reason I got this card is it's actually a pretty cool crossover between the sneaker world and trading cards. You know, a lot of these sneaker flippers came into our space during COVID. You know, I don't know how many of them are still around, but there's quite a few people and quite a few, you know, important people in our space that have crossover between, you know, like sneaker culture and the trading card market. So this card is trying to combine the two of them. And doing this 3 years ago was actually a very interesting design for Panini to do. I mean, they had to have planned this thing out in 2018, right? Like to do something like this. So I love this. I love this card. I love this design. A similar grade, I think it was a 7.5, sold a few months ago for 2,600. But, you know, the Pels have been playing well. Modern stuff has dipped a little bit, but Zion's also been playing really good. You know, I've got this card going for 2,450.
Oof, you did it to me. I thought you had a 3 in front of it, and I was going to be quite happy. I think, to your point, I know what Panini was attempting to do with this card, and it was to appeal to sneakerheads and hopefully get them involved in the space for some crossover intrigue. To me, it feels like a failed attempt. Like, the card is horrifically designed. Somehow Panini managed to make Zion Williamson look small, so give him credit for that. The image of Zion's shoe like engulfs the entire card. I mean, I'm getting old, Jesse.
It's a sneaker spotlight. What the hell do you want him to do?
I
love the design of this card. I agree to disagree.
I'm gonna kind of pull back the curtain here. I saw when you put this on here, it said Zion Williamson rookie. I spent way too much time, because I'm getting old and can't see anymore, verifying this was a rookie, because there isn't even an RC insignia on the card. I hate the
here
design of this card.
It has to have a rookie insignia on it to be a rookie card.
It would be a smart idea.
Oh, here comes the purist in you. Here comes the purist.
So the positives are, and there's not many, Zion's autograph is on card. Noir is a fairly premium brand. It's out of 99 copies, so it makes
you
it
must,
semi-appealing
you must be
to
a
Zion super collector.
You must be like an unwritten rules of baseball guy. Good Lord. Oh, it doesn't have the rookie insignia on it. Give me a freaking break.
It's terrible, and now you've flustered me because I
great.
Really...
It's only time I win is when I get you flustered.
I had a number in mind here, and somehow you undershot me, and you're within like 50. So now I have to figure out if I'm going below or above you, and I'm
Dude,
hoping
just throw
that...
out your original number, and it's going to be an over-under.
I'm going to go 2,300 on this one. Okay. That's where I'm going. You were on my number. Okay, if you my real number was 2,440. That's where I was at. I was
2,440. We were within $10 of each
yes,
other.
Yes, there was no way on planet Earth you didn't have a three in front of your comp in my mind.
Well,
and the way you sold that card, I was like, oh, this is going to be a breeze. He's definitely coming in with.
I really do like it, but with the some of these modern cards dipping lately, I'm trying to be a realist, and I think you know me loving cards is part of the reason that I'm so far behind in this shit. But because I love everything and. I'm trying to be a little bit more of a realist. I don't get my ass kicked every week.
Hey, it happens. You know, one would say that you winning last week was a rarity. And now is the time of the show where we get into some of the largest rarities. We get into discussing a ghost.
Damn, that's a ghost. We're going to highlight a card that hasn't sold in more than a year right now, or is serial numbered to less than 100 copies produced. We're going to talk about why this card is significant, maybe in terms of hobbies or language or just the overall rarity of it all, and why it's considered a ghost.
That rare card that we're going to be talking about this week is none other than a 2012 Panini Prism Gold Peyton Manning out of 10. In BGS 95 Gem Mint. Jesse, I'm going to give the floor to you because I love this card. I love this player. You know that, but I'm going to let you lead and talk about this one for a little bit.
Yeah, so normally we talk about ghosts that are either coming up for auction or live because selfishly I want to, you know, give some attention to those cards. But, you know, we missed a pod last week and this card was running. It actually ended last night. But I still want to talk about it because it is so rare and it's such a cool card. So these are only numbered out of 10, and this is the first year production for Prism. You know, getting a Hall of Famer like Peyton Manning, you know, the Brady, all, you know, there's some serious, serious players in this set, and there's only 10 of these cards that exist in the world. And golds in our space are very synonymous with rarity. Anybody who's been, you know, involved in our space for a long time understands that. But I absolutely love this card. You know, Peyton Manning is one of the guys that we've talked about before being underappreciated, right? And it really needs more attention in general, I think. I just don't think he gets enough love and enough shine. But part of the reason this is such a ghost too is the last sale that I could find, correct me if I'm wrong, was from 2014. And this card sold for a whopping $125.
Nobody knew it.
I mean, crazy, crazy low, right? So, you know, this card last night ended up closing for $12,600. And so in 2014, it sold for $125. I just love it. Such a ghost.
So first year Prism Golds out of 10, no matter the sport. Basketball, football, even specific players in baseball, despite there not being an officially licensed MLB product, are being viewed as one of those iconic sets. I mean, we just saw a 2012 Jeter Raw sell for a shade less than $4,000 recently. Yep. And this is the 10-year anniversary mark of these 2012 Prism Gold releases. They're needles in a haystack. It takes a lot to get collectors to move these. And I'm going to get castrated by some of my 90s guys, and let me just put a point of emphasis on this. Nothing compares to PMG greens, and to a far, far, far lesser extent, these Prism Golds are being viewed as having some of the same long-term upside potential as those PMGs. And specific to this one, right? Peyton Manning is one of the most undervalued commodities in all of football card collecting when you compare what he's selling for, just a fraction of Tom Brady. And Brady's the GOAT, but Manning has the rings for two different organizations. He has the numbers. He has an element to the way he played the game that changed how the game is actually played. And I think when we discussed Peyton Manning in one of our undervalued segments a couple shows back, we kind of likened it to Steph Curry a little bit. And then the other thing you have going for Peyton Manning, right? He's going to be in the spotlight from now until the end of time with what he's got going on with Omaha Productions. So I think this was a very good purchase long-term for whoever the gentleman who purchased that.
I totally agree. And the one thing I'll mention, the only way this card is better is if he's wearing a Colts uniform.
He is wearing a Broncos uniform, which still won a championship there. But it would be pretty cool if they had a Colts uniform on that one.
No doubt about it. And that's going to take us to a segment where we like to compare two great cards.
So we doing this or are we doing that? You tell me and we'll tell you. We're going to compare two cards right now with similar value that are completely different. Let me give you an example. Let's just say for argument's sake, you have a vintage Mickey Mantle baseball card worth $30,000. But you also have a modern day Joe Burrow rookie card worth $30,000. Which one would you rather have and why? You tell us, we're going to tell you right now.
This or that, and I have to tell you, you did the Lord's work for episode 7 with this or that, because we are comparing two all-time greats in their respective sport. One player, the best at his position, the other, arguably the best in his sport. Jesse will tell you why he is. Two iconic sets, both serial numbered, which makes them difficult to locate, and when they do become available, both sell for a premium. The two cards that we're looking at today, one is the 1998 Skybox Star Rubies Jerry Rice to 50, and we're comparing that to a 2001 SP Authentic Gold Tiger Woods rookie auto out of 100 copies in a PSA 9 grade. Jesse, tell me what you're thinking on these two cards.
So I picked these this week because the actual selection for me is very difficult. You know, Jerry Rice is my favorite football player of all time. I'm a Niner fan. And Tiger Woods playing golf might be my favorite thing to watch in all of sports, to be completely honest. So this is a tough selection for me. Here you have, you know, these 98 Rubies cards have absolutely gone crazy. I mean, they have, these rare football cards from the 90s have starting to blow up. You know, this Jerry Rice 98 Skybox Star Rubies sold recently on the 17th of November for $33,600. Greatest wide receiver of all time. And what's crazy, in a pass happy league, now this will likely change in the future, but you know, most of his records still have not been touched in a pass happy league. You've got most receptions, most receiving yards, most 1,000 yard receiving seasons, most total touchdowns, and most combined net yards. So he's the GOAT. He's the absolute GOAT, unquestioned GOAT at the wide receiver position, and nobody comes close. Now, when you look at Tiger Woods, greatest player ever in his sport. No doubt in my mind, if he doesn't get hurt, he's in the 20s when it comes to majors. I mean, he had some of the most dominant years of any player of any sport I've ever seen. I'll get into that in a second, but his 2001 SP Authentic Gold is his staple rookie card. So now we're talking, you know, a rookie card, which Jerry's is not. This thing's out of 100. It's an on-card autograph. It sold for $34,800 on the same day in November. And I love this card. I love the look of it. You know, there's a version out of 900. So this is, you know, the more rare version out of 100. But here's a wild stat. And this will get, you know, give some perspective to his dominance. From 1997 to 2013, Tiger Woods was a combined 126 under par in major championships. Among the players with 90 or more rounds played at the same time frame, the next person on that list was Steve Flesch.
Steve Flesch.
Most people are going to go, who the hell is Steve Flesch, right? But listen to this. This is what's crazy. Steve Flesch was a whopping 251 strokes behind Tiger Woods at 125 over par. Third on the list was Phil Mickelson at 128 over par.
You could have stopped at Steve Flesch. You're not allowed to mention that other guy in this podcast.
But, I mean, come on. Like, that's a 16-year run. 251 strokes? Are you kidding me? Like, talk about consistency and being a GOAT. And, you know, this is why, and because of stats like that, and it's a rookie card, is why I'm going to have to lean towards the Tiger Gold here. But it's not an easy decision.
Gentlemen, here's a key to life. Love your wife half as much as Jesse loves Tiger Woods, and you're going to be A-OK. you mentioned this.
Love your wife more than Tiger Woods loved his. Sorry, I had to do that.
Yes. So, you know, when I look at this, it has everything, right? I mean, it's gold. It's to 100 copies. There weren't a lot of really good Tiger Woods rookie cards produced. This is the widely known set. It's got the on-card autograph. It's the gold parallel. It's scarce. The idea of wildly popular set, the best golfer in gold, on-card auto, to 100 copies. Golf card enthusiasts may torch me for this, and correct me if I'm wrong, please. But you could make a case this is one of the greatest golf cards ever made, period.
I think the argument's actually pretty simple.
Okay. Good. I didn't want to get slandered by some golf enthusiast in the comments being like, what are you talking about?
That's a fairly easy argument to win.
Okay. Beautiful. The other card here, obviously, is near and dear to my heart. The 1998 Star Rubies Jerry Rice out of 50 copies ever made. It's the parallel version of the base set. You mentioned the sale you guys just had in November. It was a BGS 8.5 for nearly $34,000. That was a record. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about Star Rubies, their design stands out. You can tell a Star Rubies from a mile away. It just pops. The shine's ridiculous. You have this red foil ruby stamp with the name that's etched and autographed and also in red. You have this foil surface. And depending on which angle you look at, the colors change. Depending on what kind of light you have in it, the colors change. It's extremely condition sensitive because the back is all black, which shows some signs of wear and chipping. There were plenty of miscuts within the product. There's damage to the foil surface at times. This is a triple threat when talking about collectability and investment potential because it's an iconic set, it's an iconic player, it's scarce. That is what we call the triple threat. And so for me, this is very difficult. My heart is siding with the Jerry Rice. I do think if you're talking long-term potential, having that rookie card element to it, the Tiger Woods would probably be the better buy. And I think when you kind of look at the markets and where they're trending, the Tiger Woods feels like it's come down a little bit. As I alluded to, the Jerry Rice set a record. Mm-hmm. Typically, the smarter buy there would indicate probably Tiger. And so my heart is going with the Rubies. I think my wallet would go with the Woods. And that's kind of where I'm at here.
Yeah, that's one thing to look at, right? Yeah, the records being set with Jerry. You know, at what point do we hit a peak with that and you see a little bit of pullback? Do we now see with this record, do we see a few of these come out of the woodwork? Definitely possible.
Right.
But both amazing cards, tough decision, both goats. And it sounds like Tiger made the sweep on this one, though.
Yeah, he did. He got the sweep. Shocking, because I'm not a golf guy. I'm not really a Tiger guy. But here we are. We had to put our biases aside. Before we get out of here, anything else on your mind? Do you want to celebrate the first victory back in episode 6? The floor is yours, my friend. The winner gets the floor.
Let me pop this bottle of champagne here right next to me real quick.
You're a wine guy.
I like some bubbles.
Okay, you know,
bubbles
nothing are wrong getting prepared for the new year.
It's a good way to warm up for a good wine tasting, actually. Kind of cleanse that palate. But no, it's an interesting time. Like we mentioned in the beginning of the pod, I think it's a great time to buy. If you're looking to get in the space, December is a good time to buy. Go out there, do your research, find something you love, take a shot, and have a plan in place. But it's a great time of year.
Prior proper planning, nothing wrong with that. And what we talked about ad nauseum, right? Like, we're not just going out there all willy-nilly. Do a little research, spend some time. There's a lot of data out there. Make some educated decisions before you purchase. I feel like this was a very good segment. I know we took a couple weeks off. We had Thanksgiving travel, and then we both got absolutely swamped playing catch up from Thanksgiving, but we will be back same time, same place next week.
Make sure you follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. Subscribe to Bet the Board and get notified when new episodes of Cardboard Chat air on Tuesdays. And be sure to stop by pwccmarketplace.com for all your collecting needs.